Good evening. It's good to be here tonight and appreciate you being here. If you are visiting with us, I am not the regular preacher. And if you're a member here, I'm still not the regular preacher. I am, however, the son of a preacher and a child of God by his mercy and grace. Tonight's, I'm not really going to call it preaching, but more of a telling you a little bit about myself and about my family and about how God has worked in our lives. So I've got 3 points: blessings, struggles, and prayers. The blessings that we have with God and with the family, and the struggles that also go along with those things, but in general, struggles of life on this earth. And I'm going to be telling you a little bit about my family, me, not because of who I am, but because of the one true God that I love and serve. I don't have opportunity to preach much, and so, you know, regular preachers will you know, time their lesson and make sure they're not going over. I don't know how long this is going to be, but it won't be over an hour, okay? So, promise you that. And I see there's a little red clock up there, which probably doesn't mean anything to the preacher, but I'll keep an eye on it. Some scriptures I want to start with. Talking about blessings and God. Proverbs 9:10. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. In Matthew 22:37, Jesus replying to the Pharisees, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. Psalms 46:10, be still and know that I am God. Psalms 19:1, the heavens declare the glory of God. We can see his creation and everything around us. In 1 Corinthians 2:9-10, what no eye has seen, what no ear has heard, and what no human mind has conceived, the things God has prepared for those who love him, these are the things God has revealed to us by his Spirit. God has always taken care of me and my family. Sandy and I have been coming to Oldham Lane for about 30 years, and we finally decided to place membership last year when we moved here. This is kind of moving back for me. I went to high school and college here. Some of you I know, some of you are new here, I may not know you yet, but it's wonderful to be a part of this congregation, to worship with fellowship of believers. We're thankful to be a part of it as well. So, a little bit of background. I mentioned my dad was a full-time preacher when I was young, grew up in a family of faith. Mom was raising 3 children on a preacher's salary, trying to keep us clothed. I think I always had a new shirt going to school every year. It was a very colorful shirt. She always dressed me. I'm her favorite child, so there was 3 of us. I have an older brother who got the brains. He's a physicist. A little sister who got the beauty. And as you can see, I got both of those traits. So we had loving church families wherever we went, wherever Dad preached. Still have a lot of lifelong connections to those places. My parents were always my example. And here's some of the scriptures that the young ones can probably quote. Ephesians 6:1. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Did they all go somewhere else? Where are they? I know they work better in a group, but we know parents aren't perfect. And I realized that when I became a teenager, especially, that my parents weren't perfect. Then I became a parent, and I realized, yeah, they were perfect, and they were perfect for me. I saw my dad spend long hours studying as a preacher, and at some point he had decided to study to become a lawyer, and he again studied a lot, long hours at home, and had a home desk that he studied to go to school with, and he made that career change, and it had some influence on me later on in my life. Dad started a law firm in Fort Worth, and then in family law, and just realized, you know, he was hoping as a preacher he could have some influence on people. And people would come in and say, well, I want a divorce. You know, we want a divorce and stuff. And it's like, he would counsel and try to, you know, convince them that, you know, to try to save the marriage and stuff. And some he had success, some didn't. And I think what really got him as a private lawyer was the couple that came in and he told them, you know, they said, well, we want a divorce. And he's like, well, you know, let's counsel some. And you know, finally came down to, really, I don't want to divorce people unless there's an unfaithful one. And one of them and the couple looked at each other and said, well, which one of us has to be unfaithful? And so it was kind of a shock to him. So anyway, he came to Abilene and worked in the DA's office here, and was very successful. That it's a very stressful job. At some point, we got a call in the middle of the night when my wife and I were first married, and it was Mom saying, Dad's in the hospital. We're down in Galveston. We had a conference down there. We're down here, and he's in probably one of the best hospitals you could be. He had had we thought it was a stroke, it was a major aneurysm, and he was down there for a long time. But that night, they said, you all need to come in. The doctor said he's not going to make it. You just need to come on in. And prayers went up. We had people calling from different congregations he had preached, and people that we knew currently were all praying. And we left it up to God. He did make it through that night, and he made it through the next days and the next weeks. And he was able to walk out of the hospital. And not many people who have a major aneurysm like he had, the doctors were amazed. They, you know, they could see a miracle happen. And that's God working in his life, because God wasn't through with him. He had more things to do. And I'm thankful for that I could have that extra time with him as my father. Ecclesiastes 9:10, whatever your hands find to do, do it with all your might. The talents God gives us is for use for his glory. I had some opportunities in high school to deal with evangelism. I had a great youth group. We went to many places doing vacation Bible schools, went to Wyoming, went to Pennsylvania, even got a chance to go to Scotland and do a vacation Bible school over. That was quite a different experience from here, but also participated in school activities, band, choir, drafting class. I led songs at church, and I'm just really glad to see the young men get up and lead songs. You get up here and you're scared to death, but you do it anyway because you're serving the Lord. Thank you for taking that challenge on. After high school, I had some choices to make. Was I going to, you know, I was pretty good at band. Was I going to stay in music? Was I going to go in ministry like my dad? And was I going to be something else, an architect? Well, Mom and Dad were sending me to ACU. They didn't have architecture. They did have Bible, and they did have music. And I ended up with music and really enjoyed it. Taught school for 28 years. My wife always thought I was crazy because I was locking my room, myself in a small room with about 35 11 and 12 year olds with noisemakers. And, you know, you got to make something out of that chaos and make it come out of there into music or something that sounds like music. Proverbs 16:3, commit to the Lord whatever you do, and he will establish your plans. And in Colossians 3:23, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for human masters. I would like to say I started with God in all my career decisions, but he had to teach me to trust him. And I believe he did this not because he wanted to impose his will on me, but because I had already entrusted my life to him, and he wanted me to put the trust back into him. When I finished college, I got a degree in music, and after college, they don't hire teachers and stuff during the summer usually, so I worked at Target. It was a pretty new Target here in Abilene. And I remember getting up there at 6 in the morning and stocking shelves, and I did that and because I was going to go in the fall to North Texas State University and become a professional musician. And I loaded up my little Subaru and got on the loop out here from my parents' house. And I didn't get to I-20 before the car broke down. And I had it towed in. The engine was mush, just kind of ate itself. And so I didn't have a car. I didn't have a job at Target anymore, but I went right back there and said, hey, can I get that job back, stocking shelves? And I did. And it's probably about a week later in August when I got a phone call from a principal way down in South Texas, a town called George West. I was going, where's George West? What is that? And people were like, oh, that's a real beautiful town near Austin. Oh, it's just one. Well, they were talking about Georgetown. That's a different place. George West was small town. Small town, small church, small school. I had never heard of it before, but my parents helped load up a U-Haul and took me down there, and I found a rent house. And I remember spending the first few nights in that rent house by myself. That was probably one of the few times I was by myself. I was, living in a dorm or had roommates. And so something started banging on a screen one night. I'm trying to keep my time down, but I got to tell you a few things. Something started banging on a screen, and man, I just kind of wanted to hide under the covers. I was living by myself in a town I didn't know anything about. Was there people trying to break in? And that happened a few times each night, the next few nights. Well, I realized, and I stayed up late and finally got a flashlight. I realized they had those little geckos that climbed the windows, the screens, and there was a cat going after them each night. And that just, so I learned to be brave. All right, where was I? So small town, rural life. I was teaching one of the band directors there. There was two of us. And I knew I was in a small town when one morning before band rehearsal, young man came in with blood from his hands all the way up his arms. And he said, Mr. Grant, I need to go help my pig. It's in trouble. And I said, oh, yeah, sure. Go go ahead. And he could be late, missed class that morning. So he was in, in ag class, and they had pigs, and they were doing something with it. I don't know, but he went and saved his pig. So being in a small town, this next portion I'm going to call Meeting Sandy, God's Will, and Little Old Ladies. So the preacher there was an older man, and I had gone with him, and his wife was a school teacher there, and I'd gone to their house many times for lunch after church. They kind of took me in, and as the lonely guy, the lonely young man there. And all of a sudden, at Christmas time in December, a beautiful young woman showed up at the church. And I'm going, who is that? Well, that's the preacher's daughter. I didn't know he had a daughter. It was Sandy. And the little old ladies had been telling her, there's a young man in town. There's a young, Christian man, and he's single, And she's like, no, Mom, I'm not getting married. I'm going to be a doctor. This is how I ruined my life with, she could have been a doctor, but I kind of ruined it. She was going to go off to Georgia or Alabama or somewhere and be a doctor, but I ended up dating her that first Christmas, and the little old ladies had kind of set up, well, I was the young man and had been there all semester, and so I was the youth minister, and so, I helped teach the kids and those things because I was already a teacher of children, and so they said, well, the youth are going out Wednesday night to Dairy Queen. Would you kind of be there? Guard, not a guard, but anyway, you know what I mean. And Sandy was going to help too. Okay, well, she was told that too. So we ended up at Dairy Queen, small town. All of a sudden, all the kids had left, and we didn't notice. We were just talking over in the corner and kind of like, where is everybody? Sandy goes, where's my ride? Well, it turns out I was her ride. I was going to take her out to where her parents lived out in the country about 20 miles. So we got to visit a little more. And long story short, we were married 6 months later. And my wife said, well, if our kids ever did that, we're going to tie them down and not let them do that. It's been 40 years now, almost. In June, it'll be 40 years. So God took me from going, it's kind of like the story of Noah. I was heading in the other direction, and he said, no, you're going down to South Texas. You're not going to North Texas. So I really think God worked in that and really gave me a blessing. Husbands and wives, Ephesians 5:22, wives, be subject to your husbands as unto the Lord. 5:25, husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for it. In Genesis 2:18, the Lord said, it is not good for the man to be alone. I will make a helper suitable for him. Sandy's always been my helpmate. She is the Proverbs 31 wife. She opens her arms to the poor and extends her hands to the needy, it says. She always has big heart for people. She's looking out for her sister, Linda, now, with her big heart. We both made career changes and made sacrifices for that. She taught school for a number of years as well and then wanted to go back and become a physical therapy assistant. And so I held down the fort and made the money while she went to school. And then went later on, not 10, 12 years ago, I wanted to be an architect because I didn't get to go to ACU, didn't have architecture. I didn't get to do it then, so I'm going to do it now. Age 52, she held down the fort, and I was able to go back, and I love what I'm doing. I love teaching school. It's a great career, and I love doing what I'm doing now. Being married is like a triangle, or it should be. You know, we've got God up at the top point, and we're both looking up to God. And when we keep our eyes on God, we come together too. Spouses, keep pursuing your mate. Do you remember when you dated? High school or college or whenever you first met, how that felt? Keep that date going. Doesn't mean you have to break the bank and go on a big exquisite date, but you can go get a Sonic drink or something and talk. You know, well, we got children now. Yeah, we did too, and we had lots of teenagers that got some extra money for sometimes. Maybe it's just a half hour. Do unexpected little things, good things that do not necessarily take money. Flirt with your spouse. Talk, communicate. Ladies, don't expect your husband to know things. Tell him. Set a time for discussing serious matters. Don't take your date time to talk about money, the budget, or children. You know, take your date time to talk about something else. But set it. But you do need to have a set time to talk about the budget and the money and all that stuff. So keep first things first. God, spouse, family, career. When God is first, all other things fall into place. Raising our children. And you know, all of this has had some struggles, had blessings. Raising children has been a blessing. It's also been a struggle. We raised two children. I'll talk about them in a minute. But Proverbs 3:3, children are a heritage from the Lord, offspring a reward from him. Proverbs 22:6, train up a child in the way he should go, and even when he's old, he will not depart from it. We have a son and a daughter. They're a couple of years apart, and this is kind of one of those situations where if the second child was born first, we would have only had one child. We love them both, and they're both a blessing, but, you know, challenges make life interesting, don't they? When I went back to school at age 52, it was a challenge, but it was interesting, and I had learned some life skills that some of these young teenagers in college didn't have yet. They were staying up all night to study. I was too old to stay up all night, so I learned to study when I needed to. So anyway, sorry, that was free. I won't charge you that. So Stephen, our son, is just like me. he had a way, and when he went to kindergarten, his kindergarten teacher was Ms. Blanton, had probably taught 45 years. And you'd come pick up your child in your car, you know, and the teacher would bring the child to the car. And she'd come to the car window many times and say, "In all my years, I've never had a child like Stephen. And it's my fault this time, but I told the children to put their chairs on the table and stand by their chair." And he did. And he got a lot of other children to get up on the desk and stand by his chair. By their chairs. So one time Stephen got in the car and said, "Mom, Ms. Blanton doesn't like it when you jump off her piano." So he was a pill. That's what, if you ask my mom about my childhood, I was a pill too. I used to carry frogs in my pants after church and come in because I found them out in the ditch. Very proud of him. He followed in my footsteps. I tried to keep him from being a band teacher, but he ended up doing it anyway, and he loves it. He's now at Fort Worth Christian Schools, the band teacher there. Our daughter, Kelsey's a little different. She, as a baby, had asthma, severe allergies, was in the hospital several times. This was the challenge. She couldn't breastfeed. She couldn't drink the regular formula. She had to have the most expensive can on the shelf. We didn't understand her as a child, her irritations, anger. She had sensory disorder. We didn't know what that was, but we kind of knew what it was when we took her to one of the movies, probably a Disney movie back then, and she was 3 or 4 years old, and she started to walk into there, and she went in like this. You know, she knew it. She just knew it was going to be loud. She knew she couldn't take it. But we got through a lot of that. She didn't want to be touched, didn't want to be hugged, except maybe special people. She was always a protector. Even though she's a couple of years older, you know, when boys and girls get in junior high age, she was a couple of years younger. The girls usually grow faster. Their growth spurts quicker. And she was much larger than our son. And one day after school, he was out there on the playground. And some boy was bullying my son. Had him down on the ground, you know. Not beating him up, was just holding him down. Well, she came in like a buffalo and just nailed him. Nailed the guy off and just... The other teachers told me about it, and they weren't, like, upset. They were just, like, laughing about it because, man, she just took care of that guy and helped her brother. She always looked out for the little guy and the marginalized. She also was diagnosed with Asperger's, which is a form of autism, so made her a little bit different, a little more challenging, still a lovely child. Both raised in the same home with the same God, each made their own choices, both baptized into Christ. Stephen's kept faithful, found friends of faith. Kelsey's always had a heart for the weak. She would bring those friends to church. I think one of them was in a wheelchair, and we would load her up and bring her. And this was wonderful that she was reaching out to other people. But at some point in her life, she let the world influence her, and she chose the gay lifestyle, which has put her on a track of chaos and uncertainty. This hit Sandy and I hard, of course. This subject wasn't, and it's still not talked about a lot as a whole in the church. We're thankful for Daniel, who does speak up about it and discuss it in his lessons. Sandy and I have had Christian counsel there for us since Kelsey's coming out. And our big question is, well, how should a Christian respond to a family member who is making bad choices? You know, not that it's just gay, but what about our young children that are, you know, picked alcoholism or picked prostitution or something else, or, you know, they lie on things, they cheat people at work. You know, how do we deal with those children as Christian family? What's our response? The answer is in the Word, Romans 12:2. Do not conform to the world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, His good, pleasing, and perfect will. We can't support her lifestyle, but she is our child and we still love her. Her friends told her, if you tell your parents what you're becoming, you'll get kicked out and they'll just cut you off and never speak to you again. And when we didn't do that to her, she and her friends were amazed. And it's not that we were accepting her sin. She was still our child, but we were like the father waiting for the prodigal son to come back. We're always there. We're always praying. We're keeping an eye out for her. And she calls us. She calls Sandy a lot, and they talk. And we're probably her only biblical influence right now. I mean, she knows the Bible. But if we had cut her off, you know, even her friends would have said, oh, we told you so. Told you these people hate us. We don't hate her. We love her. We don't like what she's chosen. And whatever it is, even if it, you know, whatever the sin is. And Kelsey's living in chaos right now, and nothing in this world is good in her eyes. We continue to pray. She drives from Arlington to Dallas to work. And guess what? She's a peace officer with the Dallas County Marshals. She's still a protector. That's still in her mind to do that. She was last winter, she was driving and the roads were pretty icy. And she always has a dash cam that looks both directions. Because she said, driving in Dallas, she's been hit before and the people drive off. You know, it's a terrible place to drive. I'm sorry if you're from Dallas, but we're glad to be out of the throat of the devil from living over that direction. But she shared this video. And she said she was passing a semi, and then she started sliding, and she faced right in front of that semi, and the semi was able to somehow slow down and stop before hitting her. We told her, God's taking care of you. God's not through with you, Kelsey. There's something more that you need to do. 2 Peter 3:9, the Lord is not slow in keeping his promise, as some understand slowness. Instead, he is patient with you, not wanting anyone to perish, but everyone to come to repentance. 1 Corinthians 6:8 through 11, instead, you yourselves cheat and do wrong, and you do this or this to your brothers and sisters, or you do not know that wrongdoers will not inherit the kingdom of God. Do not be deceived. Neither the sexually immoral, nor idolaters, nor adulterers, nor men who have sex with men, nor thieves, nor the greedy, nor drunkards, nor slanderers, nor swindlers will inherit the kingdom of God. And that is what some of you were. Here comes the good news. But you were washed, you were sanctified, you were justified in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ and by the Spirit of our God. Sandy and I always constantly pray for a change of heart. We gladly reach out to others who have family members that have lost their way. Sandy and I are working together to find and to be a resource for others whose Christian parents, who's lost children, to some of the movements that's going on out there, not just homosexuality, but there's other things that have trying to grab our children away. You may have other prayers and concerns, and if you have any need tonight, we want you to feel free to come and talk to any of the shepherds, talk to any of the ministers here. Thank you.